So I'd order the stuff, you know, and I'd assemble it all, I'd engrave it, I'd put it all together, and then I would call the customer and go, "Hey, your order's ready." And they would say something like, "Fantastic. I don't need it for another month. So just hang on to it and I'll pick it up when it gets closer to time." Okay, that won't work. So then we came up with the brilliant idea of free delivery.
Welcome to It Doesn't Take a Genius. A quick tip before we get started. Nervous public speakers have often used the trick of visualizing their audiences in their underwear to calm their nerves. You may want to try that as you watch Mark and Mike. After all, neither one of them is wearing pants. I'm just saying.
Ramsey!
Marshall, do you know the story of Sisyphus?
The rock guy?
That's right.
Yes, pushing the boulder up the hill kind of guy.
That's his punishment for all eternity in Hades, is he has to... he was cheating death, and so the punishment was, once he finally died, they made him push a boulder up a hill to watch it fall back down. And then he has to push it up again, and then it falls back down.
I'm pretty sure he's my patron saint. Might be my guardian angel. Yeah. Somehow that guy's influencing my life. There's no doubt.
Well, so I understand that you have a little story to share to get us started here, that may have something, maybe it has something to do with Sisyphus. I don't know. I just saw the picture behind you that had a guy pushing a boulder up a hill that says constraints on it.
Yes. With today's topic, constraints, positive or negative, you will decide. Yep. And it's interesting because the picture is great because in this case, pushing the rock labeled constraints up the hill is one of those dolls that you pose to make art projects. Like it's one of those things. And this is how this all began. I was a friend of mine, their daughter is going to college. Mm-hmm. Her major is art. I'm not sure what kind of art, but she's fabulous. She's just an incredible artist. She can paint, she can draw, she's real life stuff, abstract stuff. She's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I asked her how classes was going. She said, "Well, you know, I'm taking this one class, this one art drawing class, but it's really stupid." I'm like, "Well, what makes it stupid?" She goes, "Well, the teacher keeps coming up with these rules for each art project."
This is already my favorite story that you've ever told. Keep going.
I said, "Well, what kind of rules?" "Well, you have to, you have to do a drawing like this and you can only use one color. You have to do a drawing, a pencil drawing, and you can never lift the pencil from the paper. The pencil must never be raised from the paper. And when you're done, you have to have a completed drawing." You have to make you have to make a sculpture, and the sculpture has to be made out of this leftover material that's just in a pile in the middle of the art room. And then she says, in her wonderful youthful naivety, she says, "It'll be great to get out into the real world and do this where I won't have constraints."
I somehow knew the story was going that way.
And you're just like, "Oh, you have no idea what's coming."
Oh, man. It's going to be fun.
You're just like, when you're out in the world, right, and somebody's paying you to create art,
yep,
I'm sure there will be no constraints. There will be no, I don't know, budgets,
yep,
deadlines, audiences to serve, types of media that are allowable, not allowable, it'll be nothing but constraints.
100%. 100%. It's not fair to say, it's just cold, hard reality. A lot of times it's going to feel pretty cold and hard. I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
Be honest with you.
Yeah. And how many times will the artist have all of us uttered the phrase, "It'd be a lot easier if..."
Yeah.
we had more money, we had more time, we had more, we had, you know, a different outlet for this. We had, you know, all these, you know, different customers. We have a different marketing campaign. We had, right. We say that all the time because the constraints, we know that the constraints have boxed us in a particular area. So now the question becomes, right, the idea that constraints actually make you more creative.
Yeah, 100% agree with that.
And one, you know, I was reading a blog post on this, and one guy called it the power of problems. And the whole idea was yeah, problems. Right. Constraints within a problem cause you to be more creative, cause you to do things that are beyond the norm. And that's where the innovation, the creativity, the learning, the breakthroughs, all that occurs because of constraints.
So you see this in art all the time. I can think of two examples off the top of my head. One is the movie Prince of Egypt. Was a like a Moses, you know, Red Sea parting movie. And this is what, back in the 90s. And I think it was one of the first pictures where DreamWorks really became an animation studio of force. They weren't Jews or Christians necessarily. It wasn't like they were Bible believing people who made this movie, but they decided we'll be as true to the source text as possible. And the one place where there was some disagreement on that was that the Muslims believe that Moses was adopted by the sister of Pharaoh, and the Bible says that he was adopted by the daughter of Pharaoh. I think that was, you know, that's like the one place where they sort of had to hedge their bets. But everywhere else, they basically said, we're just going to talk to theologians and scholars and clerics, pastors, and try to be true to whatever it says. And they said that it made it some of the best art that they had done because, oh, well, it has to be within these boundaries. So what could we do within these boundaries? They weren't allowed to just say, whatever we want, just go nuts. So even the people inside the studio were like, this actually made us better to have to do it this way. So there's one. Yeah.
Well, that's a great example. And when you think about that, it's almost paralyzing if they say, all right, do whatever you want.
Yep.
What are the parameters?
Too many choices.
Yeah. It's too broad.
Yep.
Right. And so the idea that constraints breed resourcefulness.
Yeah.
And you see this, you know, you see this all the time in business, right? Right. You've got this startup mentality.
Mm-hmm.
We've only got this much money. We've only got 3 employees and we've got a half-baked product.
Yep.
You know, how do we turn this into a multi-million dollar operation? And yeah, all of a sudden people start becoming incredibly resourceful. Right. Through their networking and their creativity and their problem solving, all that starts to flourish because I've got this very narrow arena to work in.
And that can even pay off when the constraints are not equal among the team members. You can have constraints where you've got a team member that, you know, maybe they can't be there all the time because they're co-assigned to another team. Well, that's a constraint on your team, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that that's the way it's set up means you have to start getting really serious about how you do your meetings. Your meetings become better as a result because you have to make those meetings productive. Another example of that, the pandemic, right? A huge constraint on the average workspace, the average workplace. I remember talking to a dealer who made the decision to stay open. They were going to follow the law and only have X number of people in the building at one time. And so they came up with this really clever system where there was a shift and there would be a changing of the guard where one came in and one team left and one team came in. And they realized, oh man, this is a huge constraint on our schedule. We can't just sit around waiting for a customer to show up. We should probably start scheduling appointments. So this is a car dealership that did something kind of crazy. They scheduled people to come in for appointments for when they wanted to look at a car. Turns out more people bought cars as a result because they knew, like, oh, this is my window that I get to decide on making a purchase. The salesperson said, oh, this is my window that I need to be prepared for. So the cars were ready. The customer had done their research. The salesperson had done their research, and sales skyrocketed, frankly, as a result. And oh, by the way, everybody got to go home and have dinner with their family on a regular basis, which was something kind of unheard of in the car business as well because of retail hours. So all these constraints ended up being a blossoming, not just of productivity, but of personal time for all these people because they decided we're going to honor the constraint and figure out how to work around it.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that was one of the questions as we came out of the pandemic. One of the questions we would ask folks is, what did you start doing during the pandemic that needs to live on?
Yeah.
Right. We figured out, oh, yeah, this is actually a good idea.
Yep.
It needs to live on. And some of that was shorter work hours, shifts, scheduling, appointments, scheduling, finance, all of a sudden.
Yep.
Yeah, these ideas turned out to be great, but it was that constraint that brought them about. Left to our own devices without that, we may or may not have ever have discovered these things and put them in and implemented them.
It's a little bit necessity is the mother of invention. I mean, that's one of the proverbs that spills out of this. And one more example I can think of. Oh, you know what? I'm going to step off camera for a minute, Mike, and show you something. Let me see if I can do this without showing the fact that I don't have dress pants on.
It's like show and tell. We're gonna have a visual aid.
You're gonna have a visual aid, and it's so cool. I may have brought it up before. Brian Eno and Peter Schmidt. Is it Peter Schmidt? Yeah, Peter Schmidt, artists. Brian Eno was in Roxy Music and produced just about everybody you can think of that's considered artfully cool. And this is a deck of cards they came up with called Oblique Strategies. Oblique Strategies. Let me show you some sample cards from the deck. Here's one. It says, the most important thing is the thing most easily forgotten. Let me pick another one at random. Don't be frightened to display your talents. Just one more. Not building a wall, but making a brick. Pretty oblique, right? Like, what the heck does that mean? Well, here's what he would do. If there was a creative block and an artist that he was working with or he himself was struggling to, take the next step on an album, on a song, they'd draw a card. And they said, you have to honor the card. Here's your constraint. Right. You take this card, interpret it as you will, but you have to honor the card. And there's a famous example from he produced David Bowie's Berlin trilogy, the those albums that he made in the 70s that were that are sort of his people consider it David Bowie's high water mark of creativity, I guess, in some circles. But there's a famous example where they both drew a card and did not tell each other what the card said, and said, okay, we're going to make this song. You honor your card, I'll honor my card. Well, it turns out that their cards basically were opposites. One said, make it bigger. One said, make it smaller, something to that effect. And so so through the whole creative process, they were in complete tension on every decision that they were making as they put this song together. And it's a phenomenal song, right? Like, it made the song better because they were saying, we're going to stick to trying to honor that thing that's come up as a constraint. So I almost want to say that I hope you get some constraints, because if not, you're not going to have those abilities to get incredibly creative and thoughtful about what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a wonderful book. It's called A Beautiful Constraint. And in the book, he talks about the three mindsets when you approach a constraint, right? They're the victim mindset.
Yes.
Right. This is limiting. This is going to stop us. This is an insurmountable obstacle. There's the neutralizer. They see it. Oh, yeah, it's a roadblock, and we'll just have to, we'll either go around it or through it or whatever. And then there's the transformer, where they see as an opportunity to do something even better than the initial goal. Right. In your example, yeah. Our goal is to create a song, right? We introduce these constraints that may help us produce an even greater song.
Yep.
And so the transformer mindset is, yeah, there's something happening here. And yeah, can it actually make us bigger, better, and stronger?
You know, we're really back to talking about Booker T. Washington from a couple episodes ago, you know, the constraint of slavery. And he still mm-hmm. said, I'm going to figure out how to learn, you know, the constraint of racism. And he said, well, I'm not going to let that stop me from doing the things that are under my control that would put me in a better position. And of course, you know, we have Tuskegee Institute and a number of inspirational stories from him and changes that he made to our society just by basically saying, I'm not going to be a victim. I'm not just going to sit here and say, woe is me, I'm helpless. I'm going to do something under my control. I can't control the constraints, but I can control the choices that I make.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I'm reminded of, and I think I can tell this story because I think the statute of limitations has run out.
Oh, boy.
You know, I got out of school, big recession, interest rates were 18%, not a lot happening in the old economy. So I started a trophy and awards business. And I started it with a catalog, right? Because I couldn't afford inventory. So I just go around and, you know, go to schools and little leagues and churches and show them my catalog and ask if they needed anything. So the worst thing that possible that could have happened was I started getting big orders. And I didn't have the finances to finance the inventory to put the big order together. So back then, yeah, you know, I didn't have any credit. I didn't, you know, none of these suppliers trusted me. So everything came UPS, cash on delivery or check on delivery. So UPS would show up. I would write them a check that at the time necessarily wasn't good. they weren't bouncing. They weren't good. But at that time, it took UPS 10 days to process a check. Mm-hmm. So I had the 10-day float.
The 10-day constraint.
Yeah. So I'd order the stuff, you know, and I'd assemble it all. I'd engrave it. I'd put it all together. And then I would call the customer and go, hey, your order's ready. And they would say something like, fantastic. I don't need it for another month. So just hang on to it. And I'll pick it up when it gets closer to time. Okay, that won't work. So then we came up with the brilliant idea of free delivery. A, because we had no room, and B, I need my money. So everybody who buys trophies and awards, it's an extra part of their job. Mm-hmm. If you're an athletic director, you gotta, you know, you're in charge of athletes and schedules, and then you gotta get some awards. Right. It's nobody's primary job. If you're president of this group, right, you got to do all this stuff plus get the awards. Mm-hmm. So when I offered free delivery, right, to take that off their plate, they thought I was just, yeah. It was genius. It was just a wonderful service. So I would say, all right, I'm going to bring these over to you. And the amount of the check, you know, should be written out for this amount. So I deliver it, get the check, put it in the bank, cover the float. Right. And we
beautiful.
And free delivery, once we, you know, we were financially sound, lived on for decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just this wonderful, wonderful idea that our customers loved. We couldn't get rid of it at that point, nor did we want to. It was just such a nice thing that differentiated us from our competitors.
So customer service and marketing improved as a result of you having no money and having to come up with some harebrained scheme to make it work.
Oh, yes. And I would say harebrained schemed is the right descriptor. Yeah, it was definitely that. So you look at it and go, all right, what is the positive stuff that comes out of this constraint? Can I have a transformer mindset? Yeah. And I found this wonderful quote by Igor Stravinsky.
Ooh.
And I don't have any idea who Igor Stravinsky is, but I just like saying his name. And he said, the more constraints one imposes, the more one frees oneself. Ooh. And then he said this, he doubled down on it. The arbitrariness of the constraint serves only to obtain precision of execution.
You're going to have to say that one more time.
Okay. All right. So the second half, the arbitrariness of the constraint serves only to obtain precision of execution.
The arbitrariness of the constraint. Like, just, you don't know where it's coming from. All of a sudden, there's something slapped on you. Crap.
Yeah. So now, well, think of my example, right? The arbitrariness of the constraint, right? I've got 10 days. It could have been 7 days, could have been 20 days, but right. I had 10 days to, you know, receive, build, complete, deliver, and collect payment. Right. That made us incredibly precise.
Yep.
Right. The precision of our execution, right? Everything had to be ordered at just the right time. Everything had to be done in the right order. Everything had to be delivered at the right time. Right. The execution had to be perfect because there was this meaningless constraint that was just the fact that we didn't have a digital internet, virtual online banking system.
Well, it's fascinating that Stravinsky said that, because he's the guy who composed The Rite of Spring, which was so different when it debuted that I believe there was almost a riot in the audience. It was so wild and out there. So I would love to follow that thread and see sort of how that played out in his life. Because obviously he changed classical music as a result of that. And I think maybe that's what's connecting everything that we've been talking about, is that just because there is a constraint, just because there is freedom, you're still going to have to make some choices. And if you're smart, you're being conscious of some choices you're making and thinking about it transformatively. You've got a chance here to own what you can own and do something that really has impact. It really, really brings value to the world. And I think we talked about this earlier. You know, there's short-term impact, but there's long-term and even eternal impact. You can go down that road if you so choose to be conscious about it.
Yeah. And the mindset in which you approach it.
Yep.
Right. Is it defeating, victim mindset? Reminds me of your story that you told in the previous podcast about the War of Northern Aggression battle. where the Union Army found itself boxed in on three sides.
Yeah.
And I remember the paratrooper quote, the paratroopers, would paratroop in and they would, and the bad news is you're surrounded on all sides. That's the constraint. Paratroopers said, the good news is we can attack in any direction.
That's exactly right.
It seems like a bad thing, but the beauty of it is anywhere which way we go, we're going to get into a fight. And that's what we're here to do.
I love that. And I will say something that since we're going back to our previous episode, we should just point out the Emancipation Proclamation, by the way, was proclaimed January 1st, the second day of the battle. So the Battle of Stones River, it coincides with the Emancipation, and that is not an accident, right? Lincoln was very, very targeted in what he did. So everybody's making choices, right? Everybody's making choices and has an opportunity. So anyway, that's great stuff.
So, such wonderful points. And I think as you look at this, right, from a leadership standpoint, maybe you make a list of the constraints. Here's what we're facing, ladies and gentlemen. All right, the interest rates are up, the economy's a little bit down. Consumer sentiment has shifted this direction. These are all constraints. How will we be successful given this is the lay of the land? This is the game, rules that we've been given.
And you should definitely reference the episode we did on negative brainstorming. If you're going to do that, we'll link to that in the show notes. But this could unlock creativity instead of be the thing that hems you in. I love this stuff.
Perfect. Yep. I like it too. Hopefully it's useful to all our listeners, both of you. And of course, somebody who never listens to the podcast, I'm assuming, would be our announcer.
Well, you're going to hear from him later in the week if you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. If he got to this point, I will be impressed. But we love him because, he takes good care of us. So
he's awesome.
Take it away, Mr. Wolf.
And there you have it. Another session of contemporaneous extemporizing from Mark and Mike. I know it's redundant, but consider who we're talking about. As always, feel free to share the ideas you heard here. No rights are reserved, no permissions needed. Thanks. See you next time on It Doesn't Take a Genius.
That's good enough.